To me, there's almost nothing more scary than a creepy kid. From The Omen to The Village of the Damned to my personal favorite, The Bad Seed, movies about killer kids are right up there with movies about killer dolls when it comes to scare factor. And in 1968, a Northern England girl aged 11 committed the unthinkable. Her heinous crimes sent shockwaves through the community and earned her the name the Tyneside Strangler. Join us for episode 58 as we examine the case of real-life Bad Seed, Mary Bell. Hello, and welcome back to the 3 a.m. Mystery Club podcast. I'm Brandon.
And I'm Derek.
Rowena can't be with us tonight because she's busy doing chores.
Which is what I've been doing all day, laundry, cleaning, and all kinds of stuff around my place, which is why my phone has been off when you've been texting me.
Hey, we all get busy. And as you can tell from the intro, I am up again tonight, and I have a creepy story for you, and I hope you're ready.
I'm obsessed with Village of the Damned, so I can't wait to hear this creepy kid story you have for me tonight.
It's good.
Wasn't Kirstie Alley in Village of the Damned?
I think so. Yeah, well, the remake. Yeah, there was an original, an older one too.
Right, but the 90s one she was in, right?
Yeah, pretty sure. I haven't seen it in forever, though.
And I told him I did it with my shoe if they didn't give me the medal! But he shook his head. Said no. So I hit him the first time. Then he took off the medal and gave it to me. And then what happened? He tried to run away from me. So I hit him with my shoe again! But he kept on crying and making a noise. And I was afraid somebody would hear him, so I kept on hitting him, mother!
In 1956, moviegoers were shocked as they watched young actress Patty McCormick in her baby doll dress and blonde braids transform from a sweet and well-mannered girl into a dark and terrifying monster with the blink of an eye. The book-turned-Broadway play-turned-movie earned Patty McCormick a Best Supporting Actress Oscar nomination. She didn't win the Oscar. It went to Dorothy Malone for Written on the Wind in 1957. But her haunting portrayal as Rhoda Penmark remains one of my favorite movie performances to date. So needless to say, when I recently stumbled onto a headline that read, "The horrific story of an 11-year-old serial killer," I was instantly intrigued. So I clicked, and when I read all about this evil little English girl, I knew it was going to be my next case. Of course, it's not a mystery, but we are branching out more these days, going beyond mysteries and looking at stories that are just plain captivating. And the story of Mary Bell is just that, captivating, but it's also horrifying.
She sounds terrifying already.
She is. Mary Flora Bell was born in Newcastle, England on May 26, 1957, to a 17-year-old prostitute named Betty Bell. Her biological father was never determined, but Mary believed him to be William Bell, an unemployed alcoholic and known petty criminal. Mary knew no stability right from the start. Her mother would often leave Mary with her drunk father or other relatives so she could go out and earn a living the only way she knew how. On one occasion, Betty left Mary with a stranger she met on the street, hoping she would be adopted by somebody. Family members would later claim that a depressed Betty Bell actually tried to kill Mary and make it look accidental multiple times while she was still a baby. Mary grew up in what multiple sources called the slums. Families lived in squalor and children were left to play unsupervised in the streets and in abandoned buildings. It seemed as if Mary was destined for the life she was about to lead. As she got older, she started getting into trouble at school and became known as a chronic liar. One of Mary's former classmates, Hazel Sharp, remembers her very well. Hazel said, quote, "I was in the same class as Mary. The first thing that comes into your mind about Mary is her eyes. She's got very distinctive blue eyes," end quote. Another classmate, Leslie Hodge, had this to say about the little dark-haired girl, quote, "The piercing eyes, she got fixed on you. and you knew you were in trouble. I was frightened of her, and what you did was you kept away from her. But there were situations where she would come to you, so you had to be very, very careful of her. You wouldn't have turned your back on her, end quote.
What? So she was one of these creepy kids where you couldn't avoid her.
Right, she would come to you.
Fixated on you, that's it.
Yep. One of Mary's teachers talked about Mary putting out a cigarette on another girl's face. And when he asked her if she had done this, she just said, oh yeah. So despite all the red flags and violent behavior, nothing was done about it. Mary just kept on doing Mary things. According to Mary's classmates, she didn't really have friends because she didn't want any friends. She didn't welcome friends. But she did have sort of a sidekick, one that feared Mary herself and walked in her shadows. Norma Bell, no relation, was dominated by Mary, classmates said. And experts have said Mary and Norma coming together was just a bad mix, a perfect storm, if you will. You know the story, two young people coming together, one is the leader, one is the weaker of the two. Think about Leopold and Loeb, think about Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. Without Nathan Leopold, there wouldn't be that story about the perfect crime. Without Eric Harris, there wouldn't have been a Columbine shooting on April 20th, 1999. And without Mary Bell, two young Newcastle boys would probably still be alive today. When Mary and Norma teamed up, their bad deeds started off mild and grew progressively worse. On May 11th, 1968, Mary and Norma picked up a three-year-old boy and took him to the store to buy candy. Hours later, the boy was found wandering around and bleeding. The following day, a mother in Mary's neighborhood went to police to report that Mary had attempted to strangle her daughter on a playground. But much like Mary's teachers, authorities didn't take the report seriously. The local girl had said that Norma held her down while Mary tried to strangle her. But again, nothing was done. Then, on Saturday, May 25th, 1968, which was actually the day before Mary's 11th birthday, so keep in mind this was a 10-year-old on this day, 4-year-old Martin Brown was playing outside with other kids in the neighborhood. As I've said before, it wasn't unusual for kids in that era to just be left outside to play all day. So when the mischievous blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy didn't return home right away, his family wasn't concerned. But then around 5 p.m., a neighbor phoned Martin's mother to say the boy had been involved in an accident. Mrs. Brown ran down the street to find her little boy lifeless in the arms of a man. An ambulance arrived and transported the boy to the closest hospital, where he was pronounced dead on arrival. Martin Brown had been found in an upstairs room of an abandoned building, and since his death was suspicious, police were called in to investigate. His mother said he had no visible wounds, so police first thought he may have gotten into some rat poison. And then the local newspaper reported that he may have simply died of fright. Don't know what that's all about, but that's what it said. 2 days later, a local nursery was broken into. When police arrived, they found 4 sheets of paper. Each had a different message. One read, "I murder so that I may come back." Another read, "We murder, watch out." And on another, the words, "We did murder Martin Brown. Fuck off, you bastard," were scribbled in a childish handwriting. The fourth note said similar things, but was less legible than the others, so I didn't try to decipher it. I think you get the message.
Yeah, I get the message, and I have to just comment that a kid in the 60s wrote that.
Yeah, a 10-year-old. Well, she was 11 by now. I think this was on the day of her birthday, or the day after her birthday. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay, I see who we're dealing with here.
Yeah. But police wrote this off as a prank. But, you know, as you figured out, it was Mary and Norma. They had actually killed the kid and they had broken into the school and written the notes. But it wasn't just the police the two girls were teasing. Before the young boy's funeral, Mary and Norma actually went to Martin's mom's to ask if they could see him. His confused mother knew the girls had heard about her son's death, so she said, "Remember, Martin is dead." And Mary says, "Oh, I know he's dead. I want to see him in his coffin." The mother slammed the door in their faces. Like, I'm getting like goosebumps talking about this little monster.
Yeah, she sounds, a monster. There's no other word for a kid that, for any person, but especially a kid that age, to be saying things like that.
Yeah, unbelievable. So Martin was buried shortly after, with the cause of death still unknown. Also unknown to the community was that a tiny killer was on the loose, and she was about to strike again. On July 31st, 1968, 3-year-old Brian Howe was playing outside unsupervised, like most kids do in the area, when Mary and Norma came upon him. It can only be assumed that Mary took him by the hand and led him away, with Norma following behind. When Brian was later nowhere to be found, it was thought maybe he had just wandered off, but later in the evening, his dead body was found half naked in a field. The investigator on the scene noticed that the boy's hair had been cut off with some scissors that were broken and laying nearby, and that his legs had been punctured by the same scissors that had cut his hair. The body was taken to the medical examiner for further inspection. Examiners there found that he had also had wounds to his stomach and his penis. The cuts on his stomach actually turned out to be the letter M, carved in by a razor. All of the wounds were said to be post-mortem, so it's believed the killer returned to the scene sometime later to inflict the wounds and carve the letter into the boy's stomach. The official cause of death was listed as strangulation. After Brian Howe's murder, police reopened the case of Martin Brown. They now believe that he too was murdered, and by the same person. And based on the weak puncture wounds and just the whole situation, they suspected the crimes were committed by another child. So the hunt for a killer kid began. And it didn't take long for investigators to notice this one little girl at all their conferences or meetings, Mary Bell. She was always in the front row and overly attentive to what investigators were saying.
Wow, that's like an adult serial killer showing up to the press conferences.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and she's a child. Unbelievable.
How did she have that knowledge and know to behave like that?
Just wait until she's interrogated. So, needless to say, Mary Bell was on their suspect list. And since a lot of kids had previously experienced the wrath of Mary Bell, she was looking more and more likely as the killer. Not to mention, she told some kids on the playground that she had strangled a boy to death. Police finally decided to talk to Mary. At first, her father refused to let them speak to her, but when a witness to Brian's murder surfaced, Mary could no longer be hidden. A 9-year-old boy had seen what happened that day, and he finally went to police. He told them that Mary told the boy he had a sore throat and that she could make it better by massaging it. The boy said that she started off easy, but then her grip tightened and continued until he stopped breathing. The young witness also put Norma at the scene of the crime. So police went back to the Bell house and demanded that Mary come with them. They also picked up Norma. Police questioned the girls and they both denied it. But while talking to the child psychologist, Mary talked of how much fun she and Norma had laughing and enjoying themselves on the day Brian Howe died. She never admitted to murdering him, but the psychologist was certain she was reveling in the murder. Mary handled the police interrogation like a seasoned pro. Police were astounded at how she handled the questioning with intelligence and never once got tripped up by police. Remember, this is an 11-year-old. But she could deny all day, but the evidence against Mary was building. Police had found the scissors that were used on Brian so they could be tied back to Mary. And the notes in the school could also be tied to Mary. The handwriting was surely hers. One of Mary's teachers also came forward to report that she had written a report about the death of Martin. The report even had drawings of the dead boy and the man who found his body. And the drawing included details that had never been revealed to the public. And then police got what they really needed when Norma made her confession. Norma told police that Mary told her she killed Brian Howe and then took her to see the body. According to Norma, Mary said, quote, "I squeezed his neck and pushed up his lungs. That's how you kill them. Keep your nose dry and don't tell anybody," end quote. Shortly after, when police asked Norma why the witness put her with Mary during the murder, she then admitted to being there, but claimed Mary committed the killing. Mary Bell and Norma Bell were arrested and charged with the murder of Brian Howe on August 7th, 1968. The trial of the two girls began 4 months later. Both girls continued to maintain their innocence but started pointing the finger at the other. After 9 days, the jury believed that based on the child psychologist's testimony, that Mary Bell was a psychopath. She was found guilty of manslaughter and sentenced to life. Norma Bell was acquitted. And despite being sentenced to life because of her age, the courts didn't know exactly where to send Mary. It was finally decided that she would be sent off to a special school. It's not quite a juvenile detention center. It's not a jail. It's a school for problem children, I guess.
A school for scary girls.
Yeah. Just keep her there forever. And most blamed what happened on Mary's upbringing, calling her a victim herself. Which brings me to a concept that has always fascinated me, and that's nature versus nurture. First, let me explain that in the simplest form. Nature refers to human genes and hereditary factors that influence who we are, from our physical appearance to our personality characteristics. Nurture refers to all the environmental variables that impact who we are, including our early childhood experiences, how we are raised, and our social relationships and surrounding culture. Do genetic or environmental factors have a greater influence on our behavior? Do inherited traits or life experiences play a greater role in shaping our personality? Brian Roycroft, Newcastle Children's Officer in 1968, said, quote, "Mary was influenced by all those things she saw, her own mother's actions, and by her father's actions, and by the local community. She was deeply embedded in a sort of petty crime environment, an environment where violence against each other was something almost acceptable and the norm," end quote. It should also be noted that Mary's mother, Betty, was also into BDSM, so she may have witnessed sexual violence on a normal basis as well, including choking.
I agree with that assessment. I was thinking, when it comes to Mary specifically, I really think it was a perfect storm of circumstances and life experience, plus just her natural chemistry. She was just made to be a psycho, unfortunately.
Yeah. Betty Bell did a TV interview sometime later, and while she didn't mention her sexual proclivities, she did say that maybe the arguments between her and her husband may have had an impact on Mary. But even if Mary had never witnessed her mother choking anyone out, Roycroft said Mary was doomed. Quote, "There was little to no emotional attachment to her mother, which could mean that's how Mary looked at all human beings," end quote. The child psychologist who interviewed Mary before her trial agreed with Roycroft. She said that maybe if Mary had been exposed to love from the start, things may have been different. But as you just said, I both agree and disagree with this. I think that Mary was destined to have a shit life, but I don't think 11 short years in that environment could make anyone a complete psychopath like Mary was. So that brings us back to the nature versus nurture debate again. This debate has been going on for centuries. Philosophers like Plato believe that certain things are inborn, or that they occur naturally regardless of environmental influences. Nativists take the position that all or most behaviors and characteristics are the result of inheritance. I've always leaned more in this direction when it comes to serial killers and people who kill for thrill, which is where I would place Mary Bell. I do believe that the nurture side can definitely play a part in other criminals. But when it comes to notorious killers, say like Bundy and Dahmer, I just think it's inborn. I do believe there are some nurturing factors that serve as catalysts though, like the whole FBI profile bits that say serial killers often have overbearing mothers and absentee fathers. I think in those situations, it's like you said, it's more like a perfect storm, meaning there are nurture and nature effects being placed on the budding psychopaths. I just think Mary was far too young to be influenced that much by her surroundings. I think she was just a pure psychopath who would have grown into a smarter and more dangerous psychopath if she had the chance. And I'm sure some people will disagree, but I know of people who know other people who think they know pretty psychotic kids. Like, I just know the stories, and they all, you know, they have good homes. And that takes me back to the movie The Bad Seed. I know it's just a movie, but the little girl Rhoda grew up in a great house. She had a loving family, and she was just a bad seed. And that's what, you know, and I think there are bad seeds. So Mary Bell spent 12 years locked up. She was schooled and treated by psychologists, But according to one of those psychologists, she never acknowledged her actions and continued to be dismissive and blame others. But as she got older, she was no longer considered a threat to the public and was released at the age of 23. After that, she changed her name and started a new life, including becoming a mother, and is now reportedly a grandmother. So if I'm right about Mary Bell, how has she not committed more crimes? That's where I don't have any answers. But how do we know she hasn't committed more crimes? I mean, she's still a free woman, as I've mentioned, even a grandmother today, but we really have no idea how she's lived her life since getting out at the age of 23.
And if she was that cunning and manipulative and skilled as a child, I would think if she was a psycho, which she wouldn't stop being as an adult, that as an adult, she probably really has the skills.
Right. And I'm sure it seems like they must have thought she was reformed, but the psychologist, you know, I watched a document, like a YouTube documentary on this, and every time I quoted somebody, it was from an interview from that. And this psychologist was quoted on there, and, you know, he's the one that said that she never admitted to it. She never expressed remorse. She was not reformed. I think the fact that she was locked up for 12 years and didn't commit any crimes, it was good enough for them, I guess. But she, you know, she got out and she started a family. And I don't know how big her family was, but I know she had a daughter and her daughter had a child.
And back then, people probably thought kids could be reformed. I think we know now that people that are really sociopaths and psychopaths generally do not become reformed.
Yeah. And to know that this woman is out there still today actually makes me kind of nervous to even be talking about it. Like, so it's like, I was almost like, gee, like, why is she, you know, how is she still alive? And am I going to be okay talking about this? I'm not going to flatter myself and think she's listening to our podcast, but she's still out there.
What is she doing? Just being a grandmother in the UK?
I guess I would love to know how she's treated her children, her child, her grandchildren, and other people. Like, I just find it so hard to believe that somebody that was, like you said, that cunning and that monstrous as a child is just fine now.
Right. That doesn't make any sense. People that commit acts like that, especially multiple acts, do not generally change and become reformed.
No, I mean, and she would have just kept doing it. Like, there's no way that she was done after killing two kids. And she, you know, she attempted to strangle another kid at another point. And then I think there was another attempt. And then I read some things about the court, during the trial, she was asked if she once tried to strangle a pigeon. I don't know. I didn't get any more details on that. So I know that she probably has, you know, a string of dead animals in her path, just like almost every young serial killer. So
they should probably be asking her daughter. It's a daughter, right?
Yeah.
They should probably be asking her daughter questions. I'm not sure if that's, I don't know what the laws are in the UK. I don't know if that's allowed, if they're allowed to ask someone a question, if it's not necessarily warranted, but I feel like her family and direct contacts need to be questioned as to what she's doing.
Well, I do know that they were allowed to keep their anonymity until the daughter turned 18, and she has since turned 18, but apparently Mary, whatever her name is now, petitioned the courts to continue the anonymity. Apparently they both, you know, remain anonymous. I was not able to get a hold of the book. I think that the book they mentioned maybe never actually happened. I know there are a couple books on it. And I want to read more about it because I want to see if there are things missing from the time she was released till now that just weren't in any of the sources that I could find right at my immediate grasp, because I'm super fascinated by it. Yeah, I'm surprised that she can just keep living her, you know, her life in the, you know, in the dark, everyone in the dark. Like, imagine being her neighbor and not knowing. I would still want to know, because And I know that's probably maybe a controversial statement because I'm not giving her the benefit of the doubt, but I've already said this, that I don't think that it's possible for someone like her to be totally reformed.
No way. I don't think so either.
But also about the pigeon, apparently that's the only time she became visibly upset during the trial. Like, they talked about, you know, the two dead boys that she, you know, continued to deny doing. But when they asked her about the pigeon, she got upset. And people like felt for her. And I felt like she was probably just manipulating them. Like, it even made headlines that, you know, they badgered the young child, which I find absurd. But so I think there's, you know, there's a part of me that was like, well, maybe she does have a conscience, you know, but then I'm like, nah, she was just manipulating them. She didn't get upset about the dead kids, but the dead, you know, being asked if she killed a bird bothered her.
Hearing about the bird bothered her, but nothing about the kids bothered her. That I understand prioritizing animals and loving animals.
Yeah.
But that does not make a lot of sense.
No, and all I could think about was her going to the little boy's mom saying, asking if she could see him, knowing very well that he's dead. And she just saying, oh, no, I wanted to see him in his coffin. Like, that mother knew that little kid was a psycho at that point. That's why she slammed the door in their faces.
Oh, yeah, she definitely did. And I feel like back then, I mean, God, even now, I don't feel like we fully understand sociopath kids as much as we should. I bet especially in the 60s, they were not prepared to be dealing with this.
No. And it's just, yeah, it's so scary because they're always so smart too. And like one of the things you could say about Mary grew up, you know, in a horrible environment, but she was so smart. And I'm not saying that people can't grow up in horrible environments and be smart, but it sounded like she like had no chance in life with all these, you know, all the things working against her, but she was so smart that she could have used her smarts for other things instead of evil. So you Googled her pictures, right?
Yeah, I've been looking at pictures of her as a kid, and then I'm thinking teenager in some of them, and then I'm assuming now because I'm seeing colored photographs and she's an older woman. She kind of, I don't know if any of our listeners are Handmaid's Tale fans, but Mary Bell now kind of gives me an Aunt Lydia vibe.
So that was probably 98 when she was discovered by the tabloids, I would say.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but as a child, well, of course, we'll have photos, you know, on our social media. She looked pretty scary. Maybe it's just because I know what she did. And if I saw that picture without knowing, I wouldn't think that. But now I'm going to just go with she was creepy.
Well, once again, I have to say, I can't believe, I know we always say this, but I can't believe I haven't heard of this.
I can't believe I haven't either, because.
Especially you.
I know.
You, I mean, for everyone listening, Brandon really is interested in killer kid stuff. Like, this is right up his alley, and I'm shocked that he hasn't heard of this before.
Yeah, because through the years, Derek and I have contemplated writing scripts and screenplays, and we've written some things. And one of the stories I always go to are Bad Seed Kids. And we also sometimes, in our minds, ghostwrite Days of Our Lives, the soap opera we grew up with. And I always wanted to make the character of Sierra Brady, which is Bo and Hope Brady's child, a bad seed. And they kind of made her kind of a rebellious kid at some point, but I wanted to go all out. Like, I wanted her to like, kill Maggie Horton or something, you know, but yeah.
And when you were telling me about that, like when that character, Sierra, who is an adult now on the show, but when she was a kid, it made perfect sense when you would talk about her being a bad seed.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it did.
It just worked. And I would have loved to have written that storyline.
Especially with her parents, Bo and Hope, being cops.
Yeah. And just all the things that, you know, kids and soap operas have to put up with growing up, like parents dying and coming back and, you know, tons of affairs. And
her mother being brainwashed into thinking she's royalty, Princess Gina.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've been streaming Beyond Salem. If you have Peacock,
Yeah, we've been streaming it, but let's be honest, it's nothing like 80s and 90s days of our lives.
No, and there aren't any bad Seed Kids either.
Oh, we miss the golden age of soap operas. Yeah. Days of Our Lives was, we were obsessed with it in the 90s.
Yeah. We both separately grew up watching it, which is one of our common bonds when we finally met.
God, I hope our true crime fans that are listening to this like soap operas.
I know, we got off on a soap tangent, which is something we've barely done before. But I had to tell that story because I've always wanted to write a bad Seed storyline for something, maybe someday. So be on the lookout for Scary Kids. If you have any other Scary Kids stories, send them our way. I would love to do another. And thank you for joining us. And we will all talk to you really soon.
Bye. Thank you.